talk about some of her back-to-school favorites. Welcome, Andrea.
Oh, thanks for having me, Angie. Acer's Aspire R15 is a convertible notebook. It's got a 360-degree hinge, so it transforms from a laptop for doing the schoolwork to a tent or tablet mode for kicking back and watching a movie in the dorm room. So you can get this on Amazon for under $800. Students are using open Wi-Fi on campus, so it's really important to protect that with software like Kaspersky Total Security 2017. It protects you from those online threats, so your data and privacy are always protected, even when you're using this open Wi-Fi.
All right, Andrea, where do we go for more info?
For more information on all these back-to-school items, head over to dailylounge.com.
Excellent. Thanks. Well, now, always glad to have you, Andrea.
Thank you, Angie.
Former University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing will not be standing trial a third time for the shooting of a black man during a traffic stop. Here's more from Mark Mayfield.
Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters announced his decision yesterday after talking with members of Samuel DeBose's family.
This has been the most difficult decision in my career because I truly believe in this case, or I wouldn't have brought it.
A very somber Dieters told reporters that after 2 years, his opinions of the case haven't changed and won't change. Tensing, who is white, has twice been tried for murder in the traffic stop shooting death of DeBose in 2015. Both trials ended with hung juries. Dieters says the case is being turned over to the U.S. Attorney's Office to determine if DeBose's civil rights were violated.
The wife of former House Speaker Newt Gingrich facing tough questions as President Trump's nominee for ambassador to the Vatican went before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday. Callista Gingrich was grilled about immigration, climate change, and relations with Cuba. This is USA Radio News.
Weeds love your garden. They hide near flowers knowing you can't touch them. Now you can with Roundup Weed and Grass Killer with SureShot 1 from the Home Depot. A special buy at just $19.97. The protective shield means pinpoint accuracy, so you can target weeds without harming surrounding plants. With Roundup in hand, weeds are in trouble. Roundup Weed and Grass Killer with SureShot Wand, just $19.97, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through August 2nd while supplies last, U.S. only.
The President's Voter Fraud Commission gets down to work today, as we hear from correspondent Sharon Reed.
Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity is investigating Trump's allegations of widespread voter fraud during the presidential election. That commission ran into trouble last month when it asked states to turn over sensitive voter information. Some states refused, and the commission was sued by watchdog groups who say it could be used to suppress voter rights.
Dozens of new drugs that could be available to treat or maybe prevent Alzheimer's disease are coming in the next 5 years. Drug companies are currently developing nearly three dozen of them, according to a group called Research Against Alzheimer's, which says in a release yesterday that the current crop of late-stage Alzheimer's medications could produce solutions in the very near future. The group is crediting what it calls growing investments by the drug industry for this optimistic outlook. It's been nearly 15 years since a new Alzheimer's drug was last approved in the U.S. And people in several Northern California communities are now evacuating because of a wildfire. The Detweiler fire has burned over 25,000 acres of land so far. It's destroyed over a half dozen structures, and it's threatening thousands more. A state of emergency has been declared in Mariposa County because of that blaze. You can always follow us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Richard Scuderi, and you normally listen to me at 2 o'clock for Modern Design, and we'll be doing our show live today. But I am on Ruth's show, and she'll be here momentarily. She had a little medical issue. She's fine, and she will be in a few minutes. And the reason that I am on Ruth's program today is to talk about my new book called The Lonely Boy. And The Lonely Boy is a book about depression and anxiety, and we're going to be doing some outreach. And Ruth and I have been working on that and want to talk about that with you folks and get your input and let you know that we have some vehicles available for you to get some help. Well, why don't we start by taking a look at today's weather. And it is going to be hot. So let's take a look at today's weather. And the National Weather Service is going to tell us that today is going to be, no surprise, today is going to be very muggy. It's currently in the studio here. It says 77 degrees. This afternoon, there is a 20% chance of isolated thunderstorms. It says a high of, oh, that's a wrong information here. I see on the screen they updated. It's 90 degrees currently. That makes more sense. This afternoon, 20% chance of isolated thunderstorms with a high of 92, and we're already at 90 a little after 12 o'clock. Tonight, there's going to be, again, 20% chance of isolated thunderstorms and then partly cloudy with a low of 69. On Thursday, there's going to be patchy fog, then sunny with a high of 93. On Thursday night, partly cloudy, 30% chance of thunderstorms with a low of 70. On Friday, there's a 30% chance of thunderstorms with a high of 92. Friday night, slight chance of thunderstorms, then partly cloudy with a low of 70. On Saturday, there's a 50% chance of thunderstorms. Well, that's not good for the weekend, right? With a high of 89. On Saturday night, there's a 50% chance of thunderstorms with a low of 70. And then finally on Sunday, chance of thunderstorms, 50% with a high of 89 degrees. Well, my name is Richard Scuderi, and I am filling in, or sort of hopefully filling in, for just the first portion of Ruth's show today. We're going to talk about a very interesting subject, or at least I think an interesting subject, and that is the subject of depression and anxiety disorder. Richard Scuderi wrote a book which recently got published through Ingram called The Lonely Boy, and that book talked about my lifelong struggle with anxiety and depression. And the book has been very well received. It's sold out at Barnes & Noble and Bridgewater twice already and did sell out pretty quickly on Amazon.com, where you can get the book. It's being reprinted already. It's also available at the Clinton Bookshop, which is on 12 Main Street in downtown Clinton. Beautiful bookstore, really old-fashioned, charming bookstore. And it's available there for $15. I think it's a pretty good read. I've been told it is. But the bigger picture is that since the book came out, it first came out as an EPUB file or an electronic book for your Nook or what have you, or your reader, is that I've been getting a lot of feedback with the book, something that was very surprising to me. And the feedback was is that I was not alone in this world with my confessions of anxiety and depression. There are many of us right here in Hunterdon County or in the New Jersey area or the tri-state area that have had or do currently have these issues and have trouble with them, and it causes pain in their life. And as time has gone on and the book has come out, so many people have reached out to me in such a short period of time. Number one, being supportive of that I've come forward with my issues with anxiety and depression, but also telling me their stories. And with anything I think you do when you put yourself out there, often what you get back from others is so much more. And it's been quite amazing. But I did realize something when I wrote this book. Once I started to see the reaction that people had with this particular subject and some of my struggles, which are sort of a memoir through the years, what is it like for a seventh grader to have depression? What is it like for a 21-year-old to suddenly lose their mom and be graduating college weeks later without her as I walk down the aisle? Those things of the passing of time, of illnesses, of my blindness that I had a little bit later on in my life, some of the stresses that I had, and how depression plays into that. So I did get a lot back from people, but I realized there's a need out there to get some answers with depression, to get some relief with depression. And in my life struggles, I found that there hasn't been a clear-cut answer to how to handle this, probably because the origin of depression may be different for each individual person. Is it nature or is it nurture? Hard to know. And in doing a lot of research for the book and for the media that I've been doing recently on the subject, it's not clear to me which one it is, or is it a combination for some people or not. So therefore, the treatments aren't consistent and different based upon the individual's needs, which does make things kind of tough to follow. Well, we're going to go to our first set of commercial messages, and we'll be back shortly. And I'm hoping that Ruth will be in studio, and we'll be able to tell you a little bit more about today's topic, anxiety and depression disorder. We'll return after these messages.
I'm your eyes remain, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambee's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambee's Purely Delicious ice cream, gelato, and sorbet made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton. Pambee's Purely Delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And we are back live in studio at 12 o'clock, and no, you're not in the wrong time zone. I'm actually on Ruth's program today, and we're talking about a topic which is, I think, quite actually topical, and that is mental health, and specifically anxiety and depression disorder. For those of you who are just tuning in at this point, my name is Richard Scuderi. I am the host of Modern Design. I'm an interior designer, and a little departure for me is that I wrote a book about my life, a memoir, if you will, with my struggles with anxiety and depression. And that program is called is called The Lonely Boy. I was deferred because Ruth is in studio now. So we're going to take a quick commercial message. I'm going to switch seats, and we're going to talk a little bit more about my book, The Lonely Boy, our outreach program, and just generally about anxiety and depression and how to make you feel better. We'll be back after this commercial message.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic tax supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamura Roll, your host for the program. I am a licensed professional counselor, also nationally certified as a counselor, and I have my master's in counseling. And for those of you that are already listening, Richard Scuderi is here to talk about his book, The Lonely Boy. And I'm really excited about having him here, and I really want to thank him for starting the program. He's also a radio host here at the Chamber, so he kind of knew the ropes. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you having me on the program. Sort of sloppily filled in for you, and certainly not up to your standards. But we just talked a little bit about the book, but I feel very strongly about this topic, and I have to tell you, in a very short period of time, I'm getting a lot of good feedback about the book, which is kind of a surprise to me because this is my first book. I've never written anything before. It took me about 4 years to write it. But I felt so passionate about the topic, and I've struggled so much myself. And I've come to find out I'm really not alone in the struggle with anxiety and depression. I see it over and over again. And even just in the short period of time, it came out first as an EPUB file, as an online book. But it, as of July 1st, it's been a paperback. And since the paperback has been out there, it has just done phenomenally well. It sold out twice from Barnes & Noble's in the Bridgewater location. I was told on Sunday it sold out as Amazon, and they have new copies coming out today. If someone wants to read it, they do have a couple of copies at the North Branch County Library in Clinton. And also the Clinton Bookshop is carrying it. So it's kind of getting around a little bit for a new book that's out there.
I think that's fantastic. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage to write a book like this, because my understanding is this is based on your own personal life experience.
It is. And you know what? It's kind of funny. I didn't think I was very courageous when I was writing it, although I thank you for that compliment. For me, it was more cathartic, as many people have been. I had been through a lot in my life, and I had I had anxiety, but I also had insomnia. So when you do have insomnia, I found I was up all night with nothing to do and not want to wake anybody else up. I was, you know, on Facebook and doing sort of dumb things. And then it sort of occurred to me, well, maybe I should sort of just address my feelings. And writing the book sort of became cathartic in a way that sort of calmed me. And I don't know why. You think it would upset you to rehash ideas and things that had happened. But for me, it was the opposite. It sort of calmed me during the middle of the night. So in the 4 years in writing The Lonely Boy, most of it was in the middle of the night.
Sure. Well, one of the things, you know, the process of writing this book specifically about yourself,
sure,
is very similar to journaling. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes people with anxiety or depression, one of the suggestions I do have is to journal.
Really?
Journaling is a really interesting, I'm going to say, tool, for lack of any other word, because what it does is, the way I look at it, does a couple of things. Mm-hmm. But if I keep thinking about something, it's like it just stays in my head.
Sure.
But when I write it, mm-hmm, it comes down out of my arm and onto the page. I don't know if you would use pen and paper or if you typed it or however, but it, you know, it comes out, and mm-hmm, then it reflects back at us. So mm-hmm, then we get to look at it.
Sure.
So it becomes very therapeutic in that way. So many of my clients who struggle with anxiety and depression, one of the first things I suggest is go get a journal and start journaling.
You know, it's funny, it was brought to me initially in the book, and the reason, if you look at the book, it almost looks like it's a journal, like somebody's journal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was very purposeful, because I started writing
at 13 because a Catholic priest who I had served under in the Catholic Church as an altar boy had suggested that when I was having issues with feelings that I should put them in a diary and keep that locked away in a drawer. And I don't want to give too much away about the book, but that was the origin of The Lonely Boy. It was actually a diary of some of my life experiences. You know, when I thought about writing this book or putting it out there, I didn't want it to just to be the words of a 52-year-old man writing about depression. I wanted it to be from the point of a 13-year-old boy or a 21-year-old young man or a 27-year-old that was facing a health crisis or some of the things that went along the way. And one of the best things that have happened to me is I had a client and I'm an interior designer. I had a client up at my Maplewood store who didn't tell me that she had purchased the book online. And then we were out shopping for her new office in her house. She said to me, "I want to thank you." And I said, "Why?" She said, "My son's in seventh grade, like you were, and he's suffering from depression. And I wanted to figure out what his perspective was as a mom, what a boy at that age feels like in not being able to articulate depression because he's at, you know, a certain level of maturity." So that for me, if nobody else reads it, that was worth it because I touched somebody or maybe brought a conversation up, and that was wonderful. And I hope it does more of that.
I haven't had a chance to read it, and I have a copy of it right here in my hands. And so far, there's a few things that you know, just glancing at some of the experiences that you've had.
Sure.
And one of the things that I know, and I'm going to say even for myself, I've had a very long history with depression. I've had long periods of time in my own life where I've thought about suicide and even really come close to even making some attempts. Mm. And so therapy worked really well for me.
Sure.
And it's two things. It's about talking about your story. It's about recognizing that the information that we received as children actually doesn't work for us.
Very true.
And making some new decisions and new choices.
You know, I say in the book, and I really truly believe this, but it took maturity and time to make this realize it. I realize, and now I don't know if you have children. I don't have children. But I think I've learned that our children, should we have them, are not us. They're their own recycled souls with their own agenda that physically come through our bodies, but they're very different people, and they're put here for a reason. And often through challenges makes us better. So I very much believe that for me, although I love my parents very much, loved them very much, that perhaps that was their journey, not my journey, and it was the things that came later in my life that sort of defined who I am.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So one of the things is when we are trying to force ourselves to live within the situation that we were given.
The perspective, yeah.
Right. And it's not true to who we are. Mm. It does create anxiety and oftentimes depression. Depression, I'm not fitting in. I'm not feeling accepted. What's wrong with me? And that begins the anxiety. And oftentimes it's very shame-based.
Sure.
So, you know, that plays a huge role. And the thing is that, again, what I love about being a therapist is helping people see there's another way of looking at things and that it doesn't, you know, the messages that we receive from verbal cues, experiences, just a little bit that I read, you've had some pretty heavy-duty experiences in your childhood. And you know, beginning to look at those things from a different perspective, recognizing that you're not the one that is to blame for some of the things that happened to you.
Sure.
You know, we're children. We take on the responsibility because we don't know any other way, but it really isn't our fault.
No, it really isn't. And I think you have to, at some point, say, okay, this is a life experience. And this really isn't about my parents, per se. It's about my own maturing. Right. And most of it has to do with after the that first part of the book. But the point of the matter is that children are like sponges, I feel.
Yep.
And I feel that it's very important that the environment that they're in be very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I say in the book is that I decided very early on in my own life that I did not want children because I feel that I hadn't really recovered from my own childhood and some of the damage that was there. And I don't think I would want to put that on another person. And I don't know, maybe it's a character flaw, if I could completely separate myself from it and not put that on another person. You know, I think that's kind of hard, don't you think?
I think with, you know, the more self-awareness we gain, the easier it becomes to do that. So often we react. And I make a difference between react and respond. I may react to a similar situation in terms of the way I was taught or I observed, even though I may say, why did I do it that way? It's not really what I wanted to do. It was my initial reaction. Mm. But the more self-awareness we gain, the greater I might have the urge to react. But what I end up doing is I'm learned to respond. Mm. So I think about it a little bit more and I say, well, that's not really what I want to say or really how I want to do it. And so I can make some new choices.
Sure. One of the reasons, Ruth, I really wanted to come on your show in particular is that I felt that in doing this book and by the people reacting to it and coming to me and the hugs and the phone calls and the emails and everything, was that I realized that after I wrote this book and put that stuff out there, I wasn't really done with this topic. And my thought process was to heal myself, was to write The Lonely Boy, get it all out there, accept it, and then move forward. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was I did something in what I did. And it is growing, actually, and I see it growing every day. And I feel a responsibility not to say, here, this is dangling in front of you, this is how you deal, or how I've dealt with anxiety and depression, and I'm still physically here, but that I needed to do something else. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've decided to do is sort of an outreach program that we're going to have our first one at the North County Branch Library on Wednesday, August 23rd. I've already had some nice response via social media, and we're going to get together, and we're going to, I always say we're going to have coffee, and we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important, and what I found comforting was, and I say this in the book, is that I have an aunt that's only 13 years older than me, and she said to me, not knowing that I suffered from depression, because I was keeping that to myself, because I'm a man, and you're not supposed to talk about your feelings when you're a male. She said to me she was having belabored breathing, and I thought, oh my God, I have belabored breathing a lot, and it scares me. But knowing that she also had belabored breathing changed how scared I was about my belabored breathing. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Because the commonality there sort of helped. And I think bringing people together that are going through things that are quite scary kind of makes it less scary, and that's my intent.
Well, that's part of why a group therapy, and you know, you're talking about a support group, which
sure.
is not the same as group therapy.
But
it's part of why group therapy works. It's part of why something like Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's when you've got a couple of people that come together that have similar experience, not only do you not feel like, oh my gosh, I'm all alone in this, but then you also get to hear how someone else is handling it, and you might decide to, well, if that works for them, maybe it'll work for me, and it produces a much healthier individual and most more healthier families and more healthy society. And yeah.
So I have a kind of a question for you,
sure.
And I never really understood this. You have depression, which is its own thing, and then you have anxiety disorder, and I know there's sort of offshoots of each other. One is offshoot. I don't understand it. I've had depression for a long time. I didn't have my first panic attack until I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
I had visited my best friend for years. He had moved to Baltimore, and he was not in a good place in his life at the time. His mother had a degenerative heart issue, which he had developed, and he had a couple things happen in his life that weren't good. And I was very upset when I saw him, and we had lunch with him. And then dinner time that came, he was in Baltimore. We went onto Washington, D.C., and we were having dinner in a restaurant. And the more I thought about him being sick and what if something happened to him, I started to not feel right. I started to have a rapid heartbeat and sweats and so on. And when we left the restaurant, I actually blacked out and passed out on the sidewalk. And being 30 years old and not knowing what happened, I assumed that I had a heart attack. So we looked into it, and I went to a MedEmerge, and my EKG showed that there was nothing wrong. But it's amazing what mental health has to do with your body physically and
what
could happen.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of curious, I guess, from your perspective as the professional, which I am certainly not, how that works, how anxiety and depression sort of coexist. Are they separate? Could you have one and not the other? Or?
Sure. They can be very separate. You don't have to have both of them. You can be just depressed. You could have just anxiety. And there's all different kinds of levels to both of them.
Yes.
Depression comes in, I'm going to say, two flavors, for lack of any. One depression is a real chemical imbalance.
Right.
And so our neurotransmitters in our brain are not necessarily working correctly. We're not either producing enough or we're not taking in enough. We may be producing enough, but the receptors aren't taking them in. And, and so there are medications for that. And it can be hereditary.
Right.
Then there is situational depression. And that is where we have things that happen to us, where we may not know how to cope. And so we turn feelings off. And if you were in my office and we're talking about situational depression, I would say, okay, so, you know, you said, gee, you know, it's not okay for a man to have feelings. So what do we do? We turn them off.
We depress them.
So I go and I turn a light switch off and I say, now the room is dull. This is depression. You turned off. It's not okay as a man to feel sad.
Right.
You know, it's actually okay for a man to be angry. It's not quite okay for a man to be sad.
So or at least we're told that.
Right.
My generation was told that.
Maybe it's not a truth. It's just what you're taught.
Right.
So I'm going to turn off my sadness, but now I'm depressed. The other thing that happens, too, is that we in our society are very, very badly educated in terms of how to handle grief and loss.
Oh, I agree.
So what happens is grief and loss and depression look very similar. So they have, you know, if you go down the list, you know, not sleeping or sleeping too much, you know, feeling very sad, doing a lot of crying, wanting to isolate, lack of motivation, eating too much, not eating enough. All of those things sound like depression. They're also the same symptoms for grief and loss.
True.
And so a lot of times what happens is those two things will get confused. So I may not realize that what's actually happening for me is that I'm, you know, like I'll have a client come in and say, you know, I lost my spouse 6 months ago and I'm so depressed.
Sure.
No, actually, you're grieving.
Grieving. Mm-hmm.
So it's also helpful to clarify that. So that's grief. Depression. And we also have something called dysthymia. And dysthymia is in the family of depression.
Okay.
But what it is, it's a low-grade depression, like someone who might have a low-grade fever. They just live with their temperatures a little bit off. All the time. And so this would be the same thing, sort of a low-grade depression that's just, you know, I always feel a little depressed. I just don't ever feel, you know, up and energetic and all of that. I'm not suicidal. I don't have problems not getting out of bed. It's just I kind of live my life with sort of a cloud over my head. And so that's dysthymia. Anxiety, on the other hand, really has to do with fear.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And so it's the one is loss and, you know, sadness and loss motivated. The other one is fear motivated.
You know, for me, the depression is something I'm almost used to because I know it so well for so many years. Not that I want to hang on to it. One of the reasons that I am very vocal as a male about depression is I want to get it out there and I want to get rid of it. But the problem with anxiety, at least for me, is it's so immediate. It's so in your face. I find it the much harder of the two to deal with.
Yeah.
And almost the fear of having it when you don't have it is its own thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I have clients who, you know, they're afraid to, you know, go to a restaurant because they've been to a restaurant before and have had a panic attack. And now going to a restaurant it equates with having a panic attack. So I can't go to, you know, so it becomes cyclical in nature.
May I ask you a question?
Sure.
For me, people have different triggers. Now, a couple of years ago, I had a couple of very bad things happen to me all at one time. So I found in Morristown, a support group. And the gentleman that ran it was kind of a young gentleman. And I think he was too ambitious with it. He was doing it every week. And he was having very, very bad anxiety problems. And for him, his trigger was Quick Check, which sounds kind of funny, right? So every time he went to Quick Check, he would almost pass out. So that was his trigger. For me, it's always been restaurants, and I don't know why it's restaurants, but I will go out with a group of people that I care about, and we'll be at a table, and all of a sudden the awful feelings of anxiety hit me. And I try not to let anybody know, but you'll know that I have it because I can't eat. When I have anxiety, I cannot digest food. So everybody's eating, and I try to pretend the food is you know, getting absorbed, but it's not. And people say, well, you're not eating. So for me, that's a trigger. Is that a trigger for a lot of people?
Not necessarily. I mean, it really depends. You know, your first panic attack sounds like it happened at a restaurant.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that till this very moment.
Yeah,
it was at a restaurant, so that's in my head, maybe.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. So it's not uncommon to associate something, you know, like going to a restaurant, my first panic attack now, every time I go to a restaurant. And the interesting thing about anxiety, well, the interesting thing about the brain in general is we have pathways in the brain. So it's neurotransmitters talking, one neuron talking to the other neuron, and that's how it works, and it creates literal pathways in our brain. And the more we practice that pathway, the stronger it gets.
Isn't that interesting? Is that what they call cognitive behavior therapy?
Well, sort of. Cognitive behavioral therapy is a particular therapy where I practice thinking and behaving differently. So it might actually cause more anxiety at first.
Sure, because you're retraining your brain?
Because I'm retraining my brain. One of the best ways that, you know, it happens to so many of us, you know, we get a new job.
Sure.
So I pull out of my driveway. For years I've turned left because that's how I go to my old job. And I'm not really thinking very clearly because it's morning and I get in my car and I'm going to my new job. And instead of turning right to go to my new job, I turn left. And it's just, it's a habit.
Sure.
And that's really another way to look at it. It's sort of this ingrained habit of thinking. So when I'm dealing with anxiety, let's say I'm afraid to fly.
Sure.
Okay, so what I need to do is I need to retrain my brain. I actually need to expose myself to the very thing that I'm afraid of.
Sure.
And over time, my body adjusts. It's called habituation. That's the technical term. You get in a cold pool. Does the temperature change of the water?
No, you accommodate.
Right.
Sure.
So that is a
good
natural
analogy, by the way.
It's a natural part of being of a human.
Sure.
That we adjust. We adjust to something that's uncomfortable. So if I have anxiety when I go to the restaurant and I say, well, all right, I'm only going to go to a restaurant once a month.
Sure.
Because I don't really like that whole process, I'm actually kind of reinforcing the anxiety.
Yes.
Part of what I need to do is maybe go to a restaurant every day.
And just do it.
And just do it. And eventually the anxiety will dissipate.
Isn't that funny?
Because I'm getting, you know, I'm getting, you know, habituation. I'm getting used to it. And it's what's going on in the brain.
In general, because you're not going to physically go into somebody's brain, you're dealing, I guess, with symptoms. Like, how does a diagnosis of depression come about? Is it by behavior? Is it by, like, I have certain things which, like, I would get the shakes. So I guess maybe that would be a sign. But is it behavioral? How do you come up with a diagnosis of depression?
It is. It's behavior, and it's assessing mood. It's assessing emotion. So someone with depression, like I said, you know, I'm having a really hard time getting through life. I'm not doing the things that this is a behavior. I'm not doing the things that I used to do. You know, my hobbies are just kind of languishing. I'm just not interested anymore. I'm not really sure that I want to even do the job that I'm doing. I'm not interested in that anymore. I'm finding that I'm not sleeping very well. I'm waking up every morning around 3 or 4. You know, I'm not eating as much, or I'm just spending a lot of time eating and just focusing on the television. And, well, it sounds like depression.
Sure.
You know, so, and with all of the different diagnoses there are, they all have similar symptoms. So that would be.
How do you feel about medication to treat depression?
Personally, I think we over-medicate. And I like to look at many different ways to combat, I'm going to say, anything from addiction to depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, many different things.
You know, I met a man in my mm-hmm. group that I was in, if I could direct my, met a man in the group that I was in that disbanded. I never got to finish my thought. Was that this man was so... he was so troubled by his own depression, the group didn't continue. So that's why I had, when the book came out, the thought, well, you know, I think I can do that if we do something once a month and get good people together and talk and build on that as a community. So
sure.
I wanted to throw that out there.
Sure. But I do think we over-medicate.
Mm.
You mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy. That tends to be a really good therapy.
Mm.
There's something called dialectic behavioral therapy, which is an offshoot from cognitive behavioral therapy. And basically, the best way to say it is there's an activating event. It's sort of an ABC kind of system. There's an activating event. So I use this example all the time. The guy in front of me in the car didn't use his blinker.
Okay.
That's the activating event.
Sure.
It triggers a belief system that I have, that everybody should use their blinker. That's my belief system. And the C, the consequence, is now I have road rage. So I'm chasing him down the road. I'm giving him the finger. I'm yelling. I'm honking on my horn because he didn't use the blinker.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on my belief system.
Sure.
So then the next thing I do is I begin to look at that and say, is that really a rational way of thinking? Is it logical? Does it make sense? Is it helping me or hurting me when I, you know, when I allow this belief system? Can I change the belief system? To, well, you know what, not everybody uses their blinker all that. It's my preference. I don't like it, but I can tolerate it. I could stand it. Now, dialectic behavioral therapy, which is a much newer aspect of cognitive behavioral therapy, adds things to that whole process. It adds mindfulness, meditation, group therapy, so that those things are brought into the cognitive behavioral therapy process, mm. and we find that to be really, really useful to add those things.
May I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Have you ever done meditation?
Absolutely.
I joined my friend Jeannie, who sort of you know, I'm in my 50s now, and I find that my life is kind of like a boomerang, and something happens in your 20s, and you have all this closeness with people, and then you start your own life, and then you sort of drift away. And now in my 50s, my life is like a boomerang, so all these wonderful people that I knew from college in those days have come back into my life, and it's so rewarding to build those. And one of them is my friend Jeannie, who sometimes listens to the program. And she introduced me to a group of people, I guess about 8 months ago, that do meditation. They meet once every 6 weeks or so. And they do the meditation, and they have a wonderful meal together. Everybody brings something, and it's sort of a sense of family and community. And it's so wonderful. And I love the outings, but I still have some trouble with the meditation to quiet a very active brain down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to say a lot of times people with anxiety and depression, they have a lot of that
stuff
that just won't turn off. And meditation, I'm going to say mindfulness, is such a fantastic tool. Our brain has a job.
Right.
And its job is to think.
Sure.
And so I'm thinking on overdrive. I'm thinking about, I mean, depression also has, I'm thinking all about the things of the past.
Of the
all
bad,
of the bad, all of the negativity.
Right.
And then I have the anxiety. I'm thinking all of the what ifs and what's going to happen if.
Scary.
And it's
fear-based.
Right, fear-based. So mindfulness is about being in the present moment. It's about using your five senses. What do I see? What do I smell? What do I taste? You know, my sense of touch. What do I hear? In the present moment. And so often when we're doing mundane things like brushing our teeth or folding laundry or making something to eat, we're not thinking about it.
No.
You know, how many times, you know, in the shower, did I even wash my back? I don't even remember because I'm so busy thinking about either the past or anxiety over the future. And mindfulness is about bringing me to the present moment and just focusing on that. Because our brain, mindfulness and meditation is not about the brain stops thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's about the brain getting super focused on a thought.
You know, and what you said is very, I think, very truthful to me, that I do have a very hard time living in the moment. I was talking to a therapist at some point in my life, and he talks about the elevator going up and down stairs, and and you know, I can quickly go to 1973. I don't know why that always comes up in my mind. Nothing that I remember happened in 1973 that was so great, but it's very easy in 2017 to go to that, and I don't kind of know why that is. I guess that we draw upon history to try to get lessons, but it's not who we are now, you know.
Right, exactly.
One of the, when I wrote the book, a couple people that really love me, I don't have a lot of family, but what I have in friends is unbelievable, and support, and someone that loves me very much, when I put the book out there, she wrote, you know, you're not that person anymore. And what I wanted to say was, yeah, I want people to know that you don't have to be stuck in 1973.
That's right.
You can overcome 1973 with 2017.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think we need to go to another short commercial break.
Sure.
And we will be back and probably actually kind of wrap up the show. Again, I'm Ruth Altamura Roll, host for Counselors Chat, and I'm speaking with Richard Scalderi, who's got this fantastic book that we're talking about, and also talking about some good mental health issues around depression and anxiety. So we'll be back in just a few moments.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome back to Counselors Chat. I am Ruth Altamura Roll, your host for today's program, and I am a licensed professional counselor. I've got my master's in counseling. I'm nationally certified as a counselor, and so that explains all of the stuff after my name. If anyone is interested in finding out more about what I do, I have a small practice here in Flemington. You can visit me on the web at www.altarolecounselor.net. That's Altarole with two L's, counselor, O-R.net. You can follow me on Facebook. I have a Counselor's Chat page, and I would love for you to like my page. Also, if you're interested in listening to some of the archived materials from Counselor's Chat, a good place to go would be my Counselor's Chat Facebook page, because I advertise all of my shows there, and so you could go down and do a corresponding date to the show and find the topic. In addition, if you would like to make an appointment or want to call, make a comment about the show, or have a suggestion for a topic, you can call me at 908-237-2899. That's 908-237-2899. And for those of you that have been listening, I have a guest today, and his name is Richard Scolderi, and he wrote a book called The Lonely Boy, and it's about his lifetime journey through depression and anxiety, and I think it's really exciting that he wrote this, and he's here to tell us a little bit more about the book and also about a support group that he's going to start. So maybe you could let people
sure
know about that.
You know, I think that, again, from the feedback I've gotten so far from the book, I'm really not alone in this. I think we're in difficult times. And I think it's kind of nice, and I say in the book often, it's very freeing when you give up your truths. You know, a lot of stuff, including, I think, some parts of anxiety and depression, are just sort of self-induced. We're giving ourselves something that's not necessarily there. So when you free yourself of it, when you come out and you say, I have anxiety and depression, I'm a guy, I'm still a guy, it just means that I need some help. Or I want to talk about stuff. I think that makes you powerful, not powerless.
I think it's
a good thing. So one of the things that I want to do is empower people that are having issues, as I am myself. And we have a depression and anxiety group of Hunterdon County. We're having our first one. We'll do it once a month. We're having it on Wednesday, August 23rd, so it gives you plenty of time to get back from vacation in your shore houses, at 7:30 at the North Branch County Library in Clinton, New Jersey. And if you want information, there's no charge. It's a nonprofit which has come together and talked from 7:30 to 8:30. You can reach me either by email, and my email is Cajun Maven, which I'll spell CajunMavin at AOL.com, or you can call me directly as 908-884-0770. We have a very big room that will be set for the meeting, so come, bring a friend, bring your spouse, bring anybody who you feel can support you, and let's start a conversation about good mental health.
And I really applaud you in doing this. I tell you what, as a licensed professional counselor and very active in the field, so not just having a practice and doing this, but being in different associations, mental health is always at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with insurance companies, it's just at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
And it's a really sad thing, because when we think better, when our brain and when we have good mental health, everything else falls into line.
Right.
You know, if I'm not struggling with depression or anxiety or post-traumatic stress or addiction issues or, you know, couples problems, it's just such a vast array of things.
Sure.
My life is better.
Sure.
And my health is better. My physical health is better. But we love to medicate in our, you know, you asked me that question. I think we over-medicate.
Sure, I agree.
And does it take work to do that self-care, that mental health self-care? Yeah, it does. And we live in a very codependent society where we're always taking care of other people. And then we get angry because people aren't taking care of us. And it's really backwards. It's really bad. All right, guys, here it comes. I have to have good boundaries and limits. Mm-hmm. They hear this all the time from me.
Sure.
And it's about my own self-care. I need to know what my limits are. I need to know what my boundaries are. And it's not selfish. Because I say that because clients go, I can't do that. That's selfish. I'm like, no, that's self-care. There's a difference between selfish and self-care. And sometimes self-care means, look, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm really tired, I've reached my limit, it sounds like a lot of fun, but I think I'm going to stay home and take care of myself today.
Sure, that's why they say when you're on an airplane, put your mask on first, and then put your child's mask on.
That's right.
Because you can't be good to anybody else unless you fix what's broken,
that's
right?
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, I agree, very much
yeah.
so.
So, when we don't talk about it, we're embarrassed by having depression. We're embarrassed about having, and that's that sort of shame basis that something wrong with me. And the reality is that when we talk about it, we find out other people have, you know, these things. I'm just going to say this. I'm going to use the word incest. Mm-hmm. Incest is not taboo. Talking about incest is taboo.
It's exactly that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's that. So, you know, having depression isn't taboo. Talking about it.
Yeah.
The reality is the more we talk about it, the healthier we get. So we're hurting ourselves.
Sure. I absolutely agree. And I think just talking about it sort of takes the stigma right out of it.
Absolutely.
There's less fear when you know the person next to you has fears too.
That's right. Exactly. AA has Alcoholics Anonymous. They're loaded with different sayings. And one of their sayings is, we're as sick as the secrets we keep.
That's exactly that. There's a self-fulfilling thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is that the more I let... And the reality is we're all human. What makes me think that I'm different from you or you're different from me? Or, you know, you may have had a really rough start, or you might be going through something right now that's really hard. Mm. That doesn't mean that I haven't had similar situations
sure.
or... You know, we're losing empathy in our country. But,
oh, my goodness.
You know, but to have empathy for another person
sure.
is very different than, you know, sympathy. It's like, oh, gee, you poor thing. Where empathy is like, wow, that must really hurt. I can understand what pain feels like. I've had pain in my life. May not have been the same pain, but I've had pain.
No, it's true. And you know what? The more you start to realize that your journey is similar to other people's journeys, because we're all on this sort of human journey and you do different things at different times, it does make your trials and tribulations a little bit easier to take. At least for me, it has.
Right, exactly.
You know.
And I think, too, we begin to see how, you know, when we share our own stories, we begin to see how we can actually help other people through that.
Sure.
And that in itself is a healing process.
It is.
And that's a lot of what you're doing right here. And I, you know, like I said early on, I think it takes a lot of courage to put it out there because it's not socially acceptable. But by talking about it, not only is it healing for yourself, but, you know, it'll help a lot of other people.
I hope so. I say every day I do sort of a quote of the day now. And my quote one day was, when life gives you lemons, make lemon squares. Boy, are they delicious. That's it. I think you can take some pain and have it make you stronger
Absolutely.
And better and hopefully
Absolutely.
Make somebody else's life better if, you know, God lets you.
Yeah. I've learned to embrace the pain. Mm-hmm. And by embracing it, it actually heals it and it can help others. So.
That's wonderful. Doesn't get better than that.
No, it doesn't. So we've actually reached the end of our time. I want to thank you for getting my show started just some other personal issues had come up, and you know, maybe we could do this again and have you back on the show and talk a little bit how your support group is doing and move forward.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, just one more time. If someone's interested in your support group, how would they?
Sure. If you want to reach me, it's called Support Group of for Depression and Anxiety of Hunterdon County, and you can reach me, probably the best way is phone right now, which is 908-884-0770, 908-884-0770. You can text me, you can call me, or you can email me at CajunMaven@AOL.com.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Please, for those of you who are listening, go check me out on Facebook under Counselors Chat. I will be back next week, and have a great week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
That's what I sense most of our members would like to vote on now, and we'll be doing that in the near future.
Straight-up repeal is going to come to a vote. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell headed in that direction despite some Republicans who say they will vote against it.
This has been a very, very challenging experience for all of us. It's pretty obvious that we don't have 50 members who can agree on a replacement.
President Trump's Voter Fraud Commission is having a meeting today. The Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity is looking into allegations of voter fraud in the last presidential election. The commission hit a stumbling block last month when it asked states to turn over voter information. Some states refused to turn over the publicly available information, and the commission was sued by watchdog groups who say they're concerned about voter suppression if they look into voter fraud. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Attention, all men. Did you know that bladder control problems are very common? If you or a loved one is suffering from male incontinence, please listen to this important message from Men's Liberty. Because bladder control problems do not need to keep you from living an active life.